I must have the heart of a romantic because I love a good mystery. So I wanted to share with you one of the mysteries surrounding the Bible. There's certainly a lot of others. Where'd the Ark end up? What happened to the lost tribes of Israel? And so on. But I wanted to share with you something called the Shroud of Turin. And you may have heard of it. You can certainly go on the internet and find tons of material on it. But I wanted to give you just a brief rundown of what this shroud business is all about. It's fascinating. What it is, what we're talking about, is a linen cloth. So it's just a single piece of linen. It's 14 feet long and 3.5 feet wide. Okay, so can you picture that? Really, really long piece. The threads appear to be hand spun. And if you look at this fabric, you see, and they're getting fainter over the years, but you see two images. They're very faint, straw-colored. One is of the front, and the other image is of the back of a man who was apparently scourged and crucified. We'll go into more specifics in just a minute. Just wanted to give you the overview first. With his hands crossed over the pelvis. The images appear head-to-head as though, you have to picture it this way, imagine a body lying on its back and a piece of the linen is underneath that person there. Maybe the piece starts at the foot, so it comes up to the head of the person. Remember, it's 14 feet long, so about 7 feet of the cloth comes past the person's head and then is folded over on top down to the person's toes again. So can you picture that? The person's inside this image. This is we know the cloth has a lot of burn holes and scorches. It was involved in a couple of fires over the years. Pieces of it have been patched. There's some water stains when people are trying to put the fires out. And so we go back a long way as far as this cloth. We'll talk about that in a minute as well. So here's some of the things that they've begun to discover as the science has actually been able to take a look at it, and they've had photographs of it and all sorts of things. It's a 5'11" male Caucasian, and the person weighed about 178 pounds, and there are all sorts of physical damages to this person. Their blood flows from puncture wounds on the top, the back of the scalp, and forehead. The man in this image has been beaten about the face. There's a swelling over one lip. Probably had a black eye. The tip of his nose appears scratched as if he fell. And nasal cartilage may have separated from the bone. They can tell all of this. It's amazing what they've been able to do with this. There's a wound in the left wrist. The right one is covered by the left hand. And that's what you would expect with a crucifixion, not through the palm of the hand. You don't do that. You don't crucify somebody through the palm because the weight of the body would just tear right through. Pretty nasty to think of. So the crucifixion apparently took place through the wrists because there are bones there that can hold the person up. There's a stream of blood down both arms. Here and there, their blood drips at an angle from the main blood flow in response to gravity. And then when you're on the cross being crucified, that's the exact flow of blood that you would expect. On the back and on the front of this person, there appear to be scourge marks. And the way they did scourging back then was a whip that had two or three thongs at the end of this whip. And inside those thongs, they had twisted pieces of metal or bone. And they would gouge out flesh. If you saw the Mel Gibson movie about the Passion of the Christ, you know what happened there. It wasn't just a few slash marks, a few welts being raised, but some pretty severe damage being done to somebody. The lesions on the body from the scourging matches exactly the kinds of things that they would put, especially metal or bone that look like small dumbbells in this whip, and they see those in the body. There's swelling of both shoulders. There are abrasions that indicated something heavy and rough was being carried across this person's shoulders. On the right flank, in the chest area, a long narrow blade of some kind has gone in an upward direction, piercing through the diaphragm, and it went into through the lung and into the heart. And we know that is, I say we, the people who study this, say it was a post-mortem event after the death. because it was a separation of red blood cells and clear serum that drained from it. And you only get that when your heart stops beating and then it separates this red blood cell from the clear serum. And then later, after the body was laid out horizontally with the face up, blood dribbled out of the side wound and puddled along the back, so they can see that. Neither leg was fractured. There's no indication of any broken bones. There's an abrasion on one knee, kind of like the nose tip, the idea that maybe this person fell. There's a spike, apparently, that has been driven through both feet. Now, of course, they don't find the spike, but it just looks like that from the appearance on this image. And blood has leaked from those wounds onto the cloth as well. So there's some of the major things that you see. They've discovered that the images on the shroud are three-dimensional. Isn't that weird? So it's, you can actually see depth to this, which is pretty odd. I thought it was interesting. Science Magazine came to a conclusion that the shroud had to be one of three things. And, of course, this is probably where we would get today. The product of an extraordinarily ingenious forger. That's one possibility, isn't it? Somebody that one time in the past, possibly the Middle Ages, decided this would be a good way to honor Jesus, and so they did some kind of forgery, because we can trace it back definitely to the Middle Ages. It could be just some kind of rare but natural phenomenon. The catch is nobody can figure out what this would look like or what how it would work. Or, of course, this is where it gets really interesting, the result of some sort of miracle. So I want you to think about this as we go through some details of this burial cloth. What about the background of it? As far as recent times, well, what makes it so fascinating is when you look at, I say what makes it fascinating, everything about this is fascinating. If you look at it just with your eyes, and people have seen this for centuries, they could tell it was the outline or the some sort of man on the shroud, but it's pretty difficult to see. And then, in 1898, an amateur photographer was allowed to photograph it. It was being exhibited. It's in Turin, Italy, in a cathedral there. And it's not on display all the time. You can't just stroll in there and say, hey, where do you keep your Shroud of Turin? It's put away, and then every few years, sometimes 20, 30, 50 years, it's brought out. And then this was the first time since photography had been developed where it was on display. And this photographer took a picture of it. And then, what was really weird is that when he developed the picture, he discovered that the negative, right? So he's taken this picture, now he's got this negative staring back at him. And the negative is actually a positive of the picture. Or, let's say it the other way around, the image of the shroud is actually a photographic negative. Now, isn't that weird? Why, if you're going to forge this thing, why would you say, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll make something so that it looks like a photographic negative, so when they discover photography, it'll really blow their minds. Wow. Okay. Well, in 1978, the authorities allowed a team of American scientists to take a look at it, and they found no reliable evidence of forgery, and they called it a mystery. 10 years later, 1988, they took a small sample, a little tiny square, a couple of different places on the shroud, and did radiocarbon dating. Well, it looked like it was all over at that time because it was dated somewhere between 1260 and 1390. But since then, there are tremendous controversies, which again add to the mystery of this thing, that suggest those were poor radiocarbon dating tests. Why is that? Well, let me just inject here. One thing, this shroud has undergone fire. It's been through fires, and so it has changed slightly the composition of it, which may have thrown off that dating. Another thing is the shroud has pieces that have been sewn on since there were damages, and so it could be that that changed the reading of the radioactive dating. Finally, they've discovered a thin layer of bacteria in spots, and it's possible that that threw off the dating. So that's just one thing to think about. According to one editor of Nature magazine, he said, despite the seemingly definitive tests in 1988, the status of the Shroud of Turin is murkier than ever. Not least, the nature of the image and how it was fixed on the cloth remain deeply puzzling. Isn't that interesting? Somebody said, this may be the most studied artifact in human history. Wow. And so it's not a case of not enough people have taken a look at it. People have looked at it seriously for the last 50 years. And it's just getting more confusing, and they're having more difficulty with it. They've done material analysis. Now, they've looked at the material itself. They've done biological and medical forensics on it. They've done image analysis of it. They've even found coins, which apparently were on the eyelids of the dead person. So it's quite a wild thing. Well, let's consider this. If we could just trace it back, that would help a lot, wouldn't it? And that's where it gets pretty murky. Some people say, well, there's really no historical data before the 13th century. But that's inaccurate. Actually, in fact, it says there were some historical citations. One as early, at least some people claim, in the 2nd century. There was a sermon given to it, concerning it, given by a church official. One of the things I think is interesting is paintings of Jesus's face that were done back in the early parts of the church, the first few hundred years of the church, look like the Shroud of Turin's face, kind of a long face. Go online and take a look at it. You'll see that face. And also, there's an early Christian tradition exists that some sort of mysterious cloth containing the imprint of Jesus' face had been carried by one of Jesus' disciples named Thaddeus to a small kingdom where Turkey is today, and then eventually it moved to Constantinople, and at that point we can trace it pretty well in the Middle Ages, taken to several cities in France, and then it ended up in Turin, Italy. Well, there's also scientific evidence that does suggest places where the shroud has been. There was a Swiss botanist who looked at pollen on the shroud. He found pollen from both Turkey and Palestine. And he's found some that exclusively would come from Israel. So it's interesting that because the shroud hasn't been out of France or Italy since about the 14th century, it must have been in Turkey and Israel earlier to pick up that pollen. So that's fascinating. But can they date it to the first century? I mean, pollen is nice. It tells you where it is, where it's been, but it doesn't tell you when. Well, what they've done is they've looked at the linen material and the way the weave itself was done, and so they talked to textile experts. They took a look, and they said it's possibly from the time of Jesus. And then the coins over the eyes, I mentioned those. It says through some image enhancement, according to one report, it says the coins may be identified most probably from the Greek letters and design as a lepton of Pontius Pilate, which were minted only in about 3 years, AD 29 to 32. Wow. Well, what about the image on the shroud? If it's a dye, if it's a paint, then game's over, right? But scientific investigation revealed no paint, no dye, no powder, no foreign substance that could account for the image. All right, so if somebody did this as a forgery, who knows how that happened, huh? Pretty strange. Well, some people challenge it, and they say, well, wait a minute. What happened to things like, they used to bury people with a napkin over them as well to keep the jaw shut on the bodies. But they said they've actually found in this image of the shroud, a cloth image tied around this person's head. What about the fact that the man in the shroud wasn't washed before burial? That was a Jewish custom. Well, so then that must be wrong. No. It says, actually, if you look at Jewish law, the dead bodies were normally washed, but guess what? One of the exceptions was a person who was killed by the government. And then you left the blood on the person as a reminder that this person acted against the state and deserved what happened to him or to her. So, that's interesting as well. Another thing I came across was some ancient Jewish examples exist that show the type of burial depicted in the shroud. In fact, in an Essene cemetery, Essenes were a real strict separatist group that didn't want to live with the Jews. They were Jewish, but didn't want to live as the Jews lived and tended to, almost like a set of hermits or something, and live off by themselves, almost like a monastery. And they found in an Essene cemetery some people buried just like the man in the shroud. In fact, again, the reference to Jewish law says that somebody killed should be buried in a single plain sheet of linen. So that's interesting. Then what about in the Bible, it suggests that there are burial cloths, plural. And it is tricky because it does sound like grave clothes, but it says scientific testing indicates that the man buried in the shroud was, in fact, buried in other strips of linen as well. We just don't have those. So, looks like it's pretty close to at least possibly coming from that time period. Let me take some other things to have you think about. The man seems to share a lot of the things that happened to Jesus, right? Sharp objects in the scalp, blows to the face, the bruises, the nose, the eye, swollen, cut upper lip, beaten with that whipping. They said there's something like 120 wounds all over the it says virtually every area of the body except the face and the forearms and the feet. Apparently carried a heavy object, stumbled. The five wounds that are there are the kinds of wounds that you would get by crucifixion. The wounds are so exact, according to one author, that they can be identified as either pre- or post-mortem. The puncture wounds up on the top of the head, the whipping, and the four nail wounds are all pre-mortem. In other words, they were done to this person while he was alive. But the chest wound is post-mortem, so it was after death. Now, the question, of course, comes, well, all right, did they kill other people the way they killed Jesus? It seems odd. Did they place crowns of thorns on criminals? No. How about that beating? Yeah, some of them were beaten. Most crucified people usually had their legs broken to hasten the death because they would push up to get a breath of air, so they would basically smother if they couldn't push up. The stabbing in the chest. Crucified people were usually thrown in some sort of common grave. But this man of the shroud was buried individually, obviously, wrapped in expensive linen, and hastily interred. So it seems like a lot of that lines up pretty interesting with the case for Jesus. Well, then there, of course, people are going to say, yes, but the most interesting thing of all, does it indicate something like the resurrection? Well, some say yes, some say no. There are burial shrouds in existence. It looks like what some people suggest is this image may have been caused by a burst of light or heat. And they're saying at least that's an intriguing possibility. There's no decomposition on the shroud. So it's not a case of a body lying there for years and years and years. And then somebody coming up with this cloth says that image like that is found on the cloth. A body wouldn't remain in the cloth for more than a very few days. The body adds to the intrigue, doesn't it? Wondering about that. Maybe it was unwrapped. Well, in other words, somebody found a body and unwrapped it and took it off and said, oh, we'll call this the burial shroud of Jesus. But pathologists have taken a look at the shroud. The man was not unwrapped. Now, is that mind-boggling or what? How do they know that? Well, the cloth is actually contacted the body, and so the blood soaked right from the body into the cloth, becoming attached to it. Okay, this is pretty grisly, but I mean, think about this. If that's the case, where the person has been cemented, at least at different spots, to this cloth because of his own excretions, losing the blood and all. But if you try to pull the cloth off a dead person who is at that attached, you would dislodge a lot of dried blood clots and you would ruin those borders of the stains. But the blood clots on the shroud are intact. They're visible and the borders are uninterrupted. And nobody doubts that. So again, it's got a lot of people scratching their head. So we've got a man buried in a shroud. He didn't remain in it for more than a few days, because there's no decomposition present, but the body wasn't removed or unwrapped because of the clear blood clot lines, and maybe a burst of radiation of some kind causing this image on there. So, I don't know. I mean, I have no idea. I just think it's something you ought to pay attention to just for the fun of it. Take a look. Plenty of websites that you can go to. Some very interesting people doing work on it. There's one person, he does come from a Christian perspective. His name is Gary Habermas, Habermas. So you can take a look at him, but just type in Shroud of Turin and see what you come up with. For heaven's sakes, at least take a look at the images. Fascinating, fascinating stuff. Are they ever going to figure it out? I don't think so. I don't think there's going to be a clear answer one way or another. So this is something that you can at least dive into and then see what you come up with as your own response to this.